Session number 14982, Mr. J. Brown, Reel 16.
Mr. Brown, reel 16. What date was this, Mr. Brown, this particular activity?
For when we were relieved, you mean, by the... be the early hours of the 3rd of November. Yes, we did the attack the night of the 1st and 2nd, which was some 1 o'clock in the morning, which spent all day in that forward position. Well, we pulled back about late afternoon, I think, and then in line with the 6th and the 9th Battalion, and then we were told we were going to be relieved by the New Zealanders, and it was sometime after midnight, maybe 1 o'clock in the morning when they arrived, so that must have been the 3rd of November, you know. But,
you said that you'd had a heavy time. Had you lost a lot of men?
Who?
Your company, your...
The company, yes, quite a few. So you're loading some out of each platoon, out of each section and such as that. I would...
Your own platoon, how many
of you? My own platoon, there was one section wiped out completely, but the section leader was to blame. When I'm moving in, he was on the left. He'd been a regular soldier, he was Lance Corporal and all. He joined us on the last draft. But there was a German machine gun position there, and they were pretty near to it. It was open ground, must have been rocky. And he threw a grenade, and it wiped the German, but it fell on the surface, knocked the German machine gun position out, and knocked his own section out. See what I mean? That was unlucky, that like. You've got to be careful.
What did they call him?
Oh, Christ, I can't remember now. We say we'd been getting drafts going. There were some of them were awake, some were... Only the blokes that were really with you over a length of time could you pinpoint, you know. You got that many drafts. I couldn't remember his name, no. At the time, you made a roll, mind you. You had a bit of a, not a ledger, but a book. And when you got a draft, you put the names down next to kin and such as that. You know, mother, wife, this, that, and the other, and the names. Why, when you, if you still had it after the battle, well, you usually left it back in your kid bow, you know, this, that, and the other. If you survived yourself, like, you went through that and you reported your casualties to battalion office, and the battalion ordered home sergeant, it was his job to say that the next of kin was notified as to what had happened, you know, such as that.
But you said you'd lost this section out of your own platoon.
Out of your own platoon, and the other section, I think the other section, we only lost about 10 men out of each section, such as that. But we had a few wounded. There was a Lance Sergeant, English, the same name as Paddy English. He got a pretty bad wound in his arm. He went back to walk and wounded. And anyway, later days after hospital treatment, that he came back. And the poor boy, he got killed at Marath. When he went into Marath line, he got killed. But I say names and all that, you know, you're getting that many drops and coming, you hardly got to know them. And they're in action again. And
after recovering from the, immediately recovering from the action, did you feel you'd done a good job?
They said we'd done a good job, like, you know what I mean? Like, they got through the way they had to get through, you know what I mean? And it's been a joint effort, like the whole brigade, you know. And...
Captain English, I think he was then, was your company commander?
His company commander at the time, aye. But anyway, we're only with Aussies 2 bloody days, and for some reason you know not about it again, we were loaned to the 51st Island Division. For that, we didn't out, like, we were expecting while we were going forward with these, because they were pretty good, Nick, and they were going to go forward with a foreign, the New Zealanders were going with the armour, and they were going with, up the coast. Anyway, within like 24 hours, we reverted back to our division, 50 days, so come all the way back to where we'd originally been, and we lay about for a few days. Aye, we just lay about for a few days, licking your bones, like, I think, and then we start to get reinforcements again then from all over, the scraping the bottom of the barrel, you know. And as you say, the 6th Battalion maybe got a battlefield clearance job, but our company certainly didn't, no. And but the battalion commander, he didn't take us, mind. He took some of the officers into the other main line to our original positions. And he went over the other side to look at the German-Italian positions, you know. And they come back without... But let's be fair, all the bloody mines, they couldn't have been lifted. The way I heard it, most of the officers were... They were shitting themselves, like... I wish we were out of this. But Colonel Jackson had different ideas, and we're going to have a look at it. He was that sort of bloke, I think. But after that, there wasn't much to say, because the next time we saw action was the Maloth Line, the 22nd of March, you know, 1943. But we got out to intensive training again, which you do, get made up, you get yourself pulled together, and then there was the usual bullshit parades, you know, every morning, the RSM, to get you smartened up, one thing or another. And,
did you see anything of the high-ranking officers, Montgomery and his generals? Did you see anything?
I never saw Montgomery while we were in the Alabama line. I saw none of them follow. I saw him later on, mind, on Sicily, before I went to Sicily. And but at that time, we'd heard about it. Anyway, you seen them or not, you gained that much confidence in a way, at least. We've won a couple of rounds, like, see?
Was your battalion back up to strength, 4 companies now?
Yeah, we got just about that time, we got B Company back, like. I couldn't name the date, and that. I mean, nobody comes and tells you, like, you know, it's not, somebody say, hey, B Company's back, and that's all. You say, oh, I champion, and that's as far as it goes, you say. And anyway, we're back to strength, then we moved. He'd intended moving the 50, using the 50 div again, you know. But the point was, like, said Tobruk, Mangati, and all that, the Germans had damaged the ports as much as they could. They couldn't, till such time as the engineers got them working, there was a limit to how much they could get in. Supplies, it took a lot of supplies, as you know, for to keep an army going. But what he had was 3 divisions forward, the 2 infantry and armoured, you know, was necessary support and aircraft. They took some keeping. Well, he intended to use us, as far as I understand, twice. We just couldn't get us forward. You didn't have the gear. Well, they moved us up to... in the area of City Rizeg, not where, you know. Not a great deal away from where there'd been a big tank battle there, you know, a very tank battle there now, in earlier days, such as that. Well, we had to stop there. And it was Christmas Day we stopped there. While we were there, it was Christmas Day. So we were bloody turkey with all kinds, you know. And Tobruk was just not far away. And... the battalion quarter block, the 6th and the 9th would be doing the same, you know, and sergeants above wait on the men, you know, which is a lot of bullshit, like, but anyway, it's happy time. Got a bottle of beer, a man, and, well, the tea drinkers, you could finish up with 2 or 3, like, some of them didn't drink, you know, and that was all right. Then, forget it, we moved up again. And they were determined to get us forward, but I think there was a battle at Berat. He intended the 50 div to be in there, Montgomery, but he couldn't get them, see? And New Zealand's Island Division and the tank of the 7th Army were doing pretty canny-like, you know, in conjunction with the Air Force. And we got up a few miles outside Benghazi, aye. And Benghazi's not a particularly big place. I thought it would be. It wasn't, like. Was just bombed and scarred, and anyway, the Comedy Lodge, you could get down there and get a bloody tub, you know, hot showers and such as that. And then they whip you up, we're about 4 or 5 miles up, and there was a big airfield there, Bernina Airfield. There was no buildings of any kind. It was a hell of a runway strip the Italians had built, you know, at peacetime. Of course, our aircraft were operating there, and the bloody weather was miserable. Surprising, you wouldn't think it'd happen now, but it was This was middle of January, you know, early part of January. And when we first pulled into that area, Texan Belaven, it was misty, damp, just like a November day, you know, I would. And it was like that for quite a while. And where we at, there must have been 2 square miles of mushrooms. How? Didn't ask them whether it rained camels in there or bloody horses, but there was a button mushroom. We had mushrooms for every bloody meal for a fortnight, like. And there was one thing worth mentioning. It was good, this. Horrocks, he was corps commander. That was a bloke thing about General Horrocks. We were again, fast roads, there was a lot of really old, rough, hilly country, you know. Well, the battalion was going to do well over there. Did some really intensive training there. But I missed that, like. They really did a lot of training. But Horrocks was farther on still, just out in the open desert. He had his own headquarters, some of them in caravans and tents, and all IQ blocks, you know, this, that, and the other, great guys. But it appears they did the minimum of training, like infantry training. So he decided to get them instilled. So they sent down the infantry battalions for 2 sergeants. And I was out of C Company in the 8th Battalion, that was me. And there was a big lad called Chris Randall from Manchester. I've got his photo somewhere, I don't know if he's still alive. He was out to C Company, the 9th Battalion. So we went up, and I was taking them in small arms, generally, like mines, grenades, booby traps. And he was taking them in bayonet fighting. The one guy's name was very, he was a really big athlete, you know, bayonet fighting. And tactics, you know, the layout, infantry tactics and section tactics and how to defend the place and what to look for and all that. And we were up there about a month. It was bloody great. They had a big EPIP tent canteen, you know. You could go in there on a night and you would get, there's this, not unlimited quantity, but you could get cigarettes, English cigarettes. You could get, there was American canned beer, and it was the first time I'd seen canned beer, and some Egyptian beer, that's Stella, and a bit of chocolate and all that, you know. It was quite, and these blokes was quite friendly, and those keen as mustard, you know. He only did about 3 hours on a morning, because they had other tasks to do. So, anyway, the time we were up there, 2 nights a week, Horrocks used to come up, red captain, and he used to have a blackboard waiting for him. And Vibe was good, lad. And he put you in the picture worldwide about the war. Russia, what was happening, what was likely to happen, this, that, and the other. You know. So, anyway, it was finished. And he used to come in that off. Quiet, don't smoke while I'm talking. And that was it, you know. But he's a great bloke otherwise. And there was one night he'd finished, and then he'd go and he'd seen me in what you call him, with a cab badges in. Well, he said, have you ever been to Durham, Sergeant? I said, I live there, sir. Oh, do you? Where do you live? I said, up in the Giles area. Huh. He said, do you know where Bow School is? I said, yes, about 50 yards up from the New Inn on the South Road. Yes, that's it. He said, I went there as a boy. He said, you know the grammar school playing fields? He said, I played rugby on those fields. He said, I love Durham. I said, I wish I was back. He said, so do I. that sort of bloke. But anyway, carrying on from there, I think it was the last week we were up. He come up and he had the, there was a book issue with the Army Bureau of Current Affairs. He used to have that, and he putting the lads in the picture all listening. And then at the finish, he says, you know, he says, you might think why I've brought these chaps up from the infantry battalions to give you this training. He says, at this moment of time, he says, it looks as though we're winning the war. He says, a long way to go. He says, might be another country or something like that. He says, there might be a temporary. He says, it'll only be temporary setback. He says, my headquarters are surrounded. My life's in your hands. He says, now when these chaps go back, he says, I'll see it. You carry on with that training. He says, and if the eventuality, if we've been in trouble, you've got to do this, carry on. You have the responsibility of saving my life, you see. He says, now, he says, I want you to train and train and train, so it's second nature. He says, in 30 years' time, you'll do the right thing. Even if, you know, they were looking at him. He says, I'll tell you a little story. He says, there's an old man living in the village. He says, he's in his late 70s. He says, living in a little cottage, you know, him and his old Dutch, he says, the wife, just the two of them. He says, he'd done 30 years in the garrison artillery. He says, he'd been out 30 bloody years. He says, in front of the chair, you know, rocky chair. He said, old-fashioned fireplace. He's reading the paper, nice little coal fire. It's a hot plate on this side and the old-fashioned open door with a brass handle there. He said, and the tomcat was lying sleeping down here. And all looking at him, he said, an old lady was in the back kitchen baking a few scones. Well, he says, he nodded off, you know. He says, he nodded off of the rocking chair. The paper went down and down. Suddenly it ignited on the fire. He says, just at that moment, he says, the old lady came out the back kitchen. She shouted the top of her voice, fire! He said, the old man jumped out the chair, grabbed the oven door, whipped the door open, grabbed the tomcat, slung it in, slammed the door shut, and number two going ready for action, sir. Well, you know, brought the house down. He said, that's where you've got to be in 30 years' time. They were looking at him. I thought it was good, like. You know, he was like that. He's a bit of a comedian. Well, he used to speak on television, didn't he? And he's always very interesting.
He was, as you say, a well-liked and well-respected soldier.
He was, without a doubt. He never hurt anybody. And I don't think worse than word, he thought the world of Montgomery, you know. Although he had the rank of general himself, like. Listening to him speak, not to me, like, but books he's written. I've read his books and that. And when he spoke on television years ago when he was alive, he thought the sun shone out of Montgomery's ass, didn't he?
Were you training just the other ranks, or were you also training some of the officers in the
headquarters? Oh, we did no officers with us. No.
Just other ranks?
Just other ranks, you know. And something happened while we were there, and oh, Christ, it's unbelievable. There was a corporal cook went out with typhus. You know, typhus is deadly, like, and spread, like, it's something like, you know. So whipped him off. And mine, Oryx wasn't there. But what we do, we only had khaki deal and that. We had to go, there was a place marked off by the military police. And straight out the open desert, you had to, not your arms and ammunition, like, but you had all your clothing. You dropped everything off, and the sheer sat on a bloody tea chest, and they shaved every hair off your body. You went farther on, and there was some bloke sprayed you with powder. This, that, and the other. We were so worried about it, you know. And you marched out the other side, and there's new clothing to help yourself.
And this happened to you?
Yeah, it happened to us. Being this lad from Manchester. Oh, everybody in the... But I didn't... Horrocks wasn't down my leg. I mean, that's understandable. And to all intents and purposes, they burnt everything in there, you know. Well, there's another thing. Got a hell of, it was a horrible bloody job. Me and Chris Randall. A lot of these blokes... had pets, had pups, you know, little wog pups that got, well, got now travelling with them, you know. Well, the order was, destroy them, you see. So what they did, they throw, there must have been 20-odd, to give or take, 21 to three of them. They put them on a troop-carrying truck, took them about 30 miles in the desert, which is a cruel thing to do, and throw them overboard. The only thing is they beat the bloody wagon back. And beat the wagon back, you know. So the order was, they'll have to be destroyed. But whoever was going to destroy them, there was only two boys there, that was me and Ray. Christ, I said, we've got a job here. So, bloody officer come down, he was amazing. Order. He says, you two chaps, he says, some dogs got to be destroyed. I says, throw a room on us. He says, not a bloody room, it's a fact. He says, what do you propose to do? Why, I said, we'll have to dig a pit about 8 yards square, somewhat like that, about 2 foot deep. So I'll give you the men for that. And there was a lad, he's dead now, along the bottom of the bank, little Joe Strang. He was with them, and he'd been with 151 Brigade when they got overrun, you know. He'd been one of the survivors, and he was with them. Joe was one of them, and that had to dig his pit. And with a bit of deeper one... deeper one at the end, like, you know, to toss them in. Well, that to bring them down at about 10 minute intervals, you know. Somebody both were pretty crying, you know, fetching the dog. That was a pet, like. Well, time he did one, the other one was instinctive annoying, you know. They just had a stake in the ground, you know. Well, what a job he had. Bloody Tommy gun, but a single round, like, you know. I didn't really, you know, just wait the morning and try and blow half that off, you know. What a few days later, we had to return to our battalions, see? And they, as I said before, they'd been doing intensive training, like, they're really in, you know, good nick and one thing and another. And we'd lost our transport because they'd got Benghazi partially opened and had been using our transport to ferry supplies up to the forward elements. But we got them back, ready for the off. Now, the Battle of the Marath Line was lining up. We weren't told this, we didn't know at the time, like. But Tripoli had fell, and the forward elements were heading, they'd got into French North Africa, I think. And Medinane, was it, and Oasis at Fiom Tatooine, and that's where they were. And anyway, Montgomery had been a move in front of Rommel again. He'd anticipate what would happen, and Rommel knew that he had the Marath line behind him, which had been built by the French in peacetime, God bless the French, and quite a bloody place. And he'd improved on it, but he knew that was at his back. So he decided to do a counter-attack with what tanks he had, you know. He thought Montgomery would be thin on the ground by then, which he was. But Montgomery outthought him again. He guessed exactly where he would come, had his tanks, anti-tank guns dug in, this, that and the other. Rommel got smashed up again, and he had to get back behind the Marath line. Well, then there was a stalemate, because he had to... till we got up there, you know. And as I say, we had our transport back, and we travelled back to, and then they put us in the picture what was happening, you know. We got into French North Africa. And funny, it's the same continent, but it seemed different to Italian North Africa. Seemed to have much cleaner, you know. And the villages were all whitewashed, such as that. Even native villages, we were villages that were whitewashed and everything like that. Little minarets and this sort of thing, like. And they gradually moved us forward, and we got on the high ground overlooking the Marath line. We were well back, like, without the artillery range and such as that. Then they briefed us about going in, you see. If I remember correctly, we were going in on the Tuesday night, not the matter. I could have been vice versa. On the front, on the Saturday night previous, our 69 Brigade was already forward, and they'd done a pretty good job of work, like just cleaning the forward elements up so that we'd get as near the Marath as we could for the final attack. And the Guards Brigade, they'd been operating the desert with just two battalions, you know, and they'd periodically they'd borrowed a battalion from some other. In the early part, the 1st Battalion had done right infantry been with them for a short time to make them up to 3 battalion strength. But anyway, they'd been reinforced from Britain, see? Big fine lads, no doubt, like, well trained, but not trained for desert war, for that sort of warfare. They hadn't got the chance to be initiated. They'd land them at Tripoli, straight up. They went in on the Saturday night. Oh, they've got a great cutting up, is it not? And at that time, while they shipped them later, they buried them by the Marath Road in threes. And we'd moved up then, and they told us we were going in, I think it was a Tuesday night, and this, that and the other.
Passing these graves by the side of the road...
Well, I didn't see them graves, mind, because I got wounded going in. But the lads were telling me, like, what happened, the very way you got graves buried all over. On the way up, when you stopped, you know, you stopped periodically, there was one... Oh, right, remote miles from anywhere. There hadn't even been a battle, you know. Maybe aircraft had done or something like that. I found three graves, Argyll and Sutherland Islanders. They give you the names, Argyll and Sutherland, just by the side of the road. What had happened, I don't know. There hadn't been a battle, but the HD had been moving up then, and probably a quick attack from aircraft or something like that. Just a killed in action, mate.
What time was this? What date as you moved into Marath?
We were going in on the 22nd of March, 1943. And I think it was a chosen night, but I could be wrong on that.
Did you get much chance to look at the positions ahead of you? What was the position?
Well, it was just a haze in the distance, yeah. You couldn't say now. It's very rough country, you know. I mean, I didn't even get the chance to look at the positions properly myself, like to get raiders. I didn't get into there, really. I got wounded going in, say. But anyway, getting down to brass tacks, we moved down. Well, down. No, it must have been the 21st when we got there. We moved down at night time. Now, the Grey Nowards and East Yorks were holding the position forward in case there was any counterattack, which they knew there wouldn't be, but they were just getting so we could get as near as we could. And we were lined up, each company in a waddy and this, that and the other. And the colonel come round, like, and he was briefing everybody on it, like. He said, it'll be a rough battle, but we'll do it in one thing or another. He said, we've got this anti-tank ditch across. He said, the Germans improved on it. He said, at the moment of time, there's no vehicle to get over there. But he said, the idea is, he said, when we had to take steel ladders, you know, for to climb up and this, that and the other, extra bloody weight. And he said, once you've got over, he said, we're going to run two Bren gun carriers in, filled with sandbags. So the tanks and gun over. Didn't work out like. The first time we got out now, and the brigade got to rail, got a really good hammering. But anyway, off we went. When we moved up to the forming up point, and he was sending, he knew we were coming, like, he had an idea, he was putting SOS fire down, you know, save our souls and mortars and Christ that and the other. And we were having no casualties, like. But anyway, what time were we moving in? It was 10 o'clock night, didn't I? But anyway, we were going to get a rum ration. And the 1,500 weight truck was coming up. He had all North Africa. He hit the bloody 1,500 weight truck. Extra supply of ammunition and rum ration went, like, you see. Not a made a lot of difference, but anyway, I was platoon sergeant, 14 platoon. Jeff Martin had 15 platoon. And Bob Morgan, he's dead now. He always was himself, anyway. He'd been a land sergeant in my platoon, and they promoted him and gave him 13 platoon. And we weren't too far apart, like, and Bob come crawling over. He had a bottle of gin in his pocket, so we supped it between us. Good old Robert. And then off we set. Bloody minefields. We had it was wick of mines, you know, quite deep, like, a few hundred yards. And nobody, there was no minefield way. It just didn't know whether, you know. They had a scorpion, you know, a German tank with the flails on the front. You had to follow that, see. Well, he could only get so far. He got to the waddy and he had to stop. And there were still mines after that. But he was firing enfilade fire and such as that, you know, and he was throwing this SOS fire down. And our bloody guns started with a hell of a barrage. But to some of them, there wouldn't have been Ray Bod after Alamein. There was pure firing and shot, you know. Well, Robin Cassidy was really bad. And anyway, when we were in these waddies, the four went in. There was two blokes that attacked the English. The one was a lad called Pattison. As far as I know, he survived the war, because he survived and he got took prisoner on Sicily with me. And he was married with three kids. Good soldier. Never missed action, you know. So that this ridiculous thing, if you're going into action, you had LOB left out of battle. You know, you'd usually have a couple of blokes. So if the company got wiped out, it still existed. Well, you'd let me say it was ridiculous, but there was that. Well, what happened? The same two blokes were left out every time. A bloke called out of another one. Weren't cowards, but it took them quite an hour to pull a trigger. You know, they were bloody stupid. Like, all you did was those shit wallers around the lines. And that's, but they were left out every time. So Patterson couldn't have been in a bad state. He must have known as I'm going. Should I? Sergeant Brown, he says, I'm not putting none in there. What's his beer? I said, I didn't want to go in, but I said, we'll have to. He said, and he was nearly crying, he said, I'm married with three kids. He said, it's my turn for LOB. He said, and two so-and-sos, the same ones every time. You know. Well, I says, think about it, man, seriously. I said, anyway, we're going to see Paddy English. So I told him, I says, Patterson's in trouble here, say. He thinks he should be LOB. Oh, dear. He says, maybe a future one. He said, I'm not going into Nathan, that's that. You know, he did go in, like. Well, he said, no, he said, we're here now, man. He says, we'll have to go in. I'm going in. He says, you keep behind me and you'll be all right and all this, you know. But anyway, he went in. And there was another lad, Evans. He got killed. He had a bloody state. No, he'd been in trouble before. He must have a premonition. So he said, I'm not fucking right. And all we had these pill boxes that the French had built, had steel doors on them, massive things, bloody house, you know. And we didn't know at the time they could reinforce them underground, you see. The only answer you had was sticking Then he asked the lad to stick a brand gun through the slits and keep firing and firing and firing and sticking grenades so and such as that. Put that steel doors on. Somebody had the brilliant idea to take a sticky bombs in. You know a sticky bomb, there's a steel case on, pull the case off, it's a glass. You ram it on, you've got about 4.5 seconds to get around the bloody corner, and that could blow a tank tracks off out of that, you know, blow the steel door out. Well, you haven't had two of these. You shouldn't have thrown these fucking things away. I said, oh, you're all right, man. But anyway, I went in, and as I said, the barrage coming down, loading blokes, this, that, and the other. I picked him up, his bloody head was off. Oh, there's blood all over. There's a lad, there was a Welsh lad called Phipps. He died later on, I understood, from his wound. He'd got it straight in the face. All he got was like a watering can, you know. Christ, there was lads lying all over. Jeff Martin, platoon sergeant out of 15, he'd got hit. And lying all over.